Good morning. This is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, January 31st. It's all about more gloom and doom on Wall Street in the world. The world was actually in a foul mood yet again this week. Part of it was because of the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. Those who were comfortable in their own skin and not afraid of shareholder backlash for spending $100,000 or $200,000 just to attend were nonetheless surly, while those who stayed home found all manner of topics to take off after, including the hot-button issue of Wall Street bonuses. One thing is for sure, President Barack Obama has his pulse on what will get the American people all riled up for good or bad. And in focusing on the economy, both in the United States and around the world, the news continued to be abysmal. First, here in the U.S., durable goods orders, big ticket items for December, were down a worse than expected 2.5%. The Chicago Purchasing Managers Index hit a sickly 33.3, 50, you will recall, being the dividing line between growth and contraction. Existing home sales may have spiked in December thanks to foreclosures and price cuts, but the Case-Shiller Index of prices in 20 major metropolitan areas fell for a 28th straight month in November, with an average decline of 18% year over year, and new home sales for December were a record low of 331,000, down 14.7%. Then you have the figure on continuing jobless claims, now in excess of 4.7 million and another record. And on Friday, we learned that GDP for the fourth quarter, according to the first flash estimate, it gets revised two more times, declined 3.8%. Granted, a decline of 5.5% was expected, but before you go cashing that last check attached to your credit card statement, understand this was still the worst quarter since 1982, and it will be revised downward. Overseas, Spain officially entered recession as the impact of its real estate crash spreads through the economy there, while Ireland is now projected to contract a whopping 5% for all of 2009, though this continues to get ratcheted further downward. Ireland was placed on credit watch by Moody's. Not a good thing if you're trying to finance massive deficits at as low a rate as possible. I just have to add that I went online to check out real estate prices in an Irish town I'm most familiar with, and my friends there still don't get it, as in some homes remain outrageously overpriced. In France and Germany, measures on consumer confidence surprisingly ticked up. Then France was hit by a massive labor protest, and Germany's unemployment rate hit 7.8%. In Asia, Japan's reading on December industrial production fell a record 9.6%. 9.6. Japan is experiencing its worst recession in three decades. The International Monetary Fund now forecasts declines in GDP for 2009 of 1.6% in the U.S., 2.6% in Japan, and 2% in the European Union. Contrast this with much smaller declines as projected by the same IMF just last November of 0.7% in the U.S., 0.2% in Japan, and 0.5% in the EU. Additionally, the IMF forecasts the amount of credit-related losses that will be reported by financial institutions around the world will exceed $2.2 trillion, or about half what is already known. So, is it any wonder that corporations are throwing up their arms and saying they have zero visibility and looking out the rest of the year? One company after another is refusing to issue guidance on future earnings while they announce massive layoffs. Just check out this week's roster. Caterpillar, 20,000 pink slips. Actually, they announced an additional 2,000 on top of that Friday. Pfizer, Wyeth, which the two are indeed merging, 19,500. Netherlands-based Philips, 6,000, and ING, 7,000. Sprint Nextel, 8,000. SAP, 3,000. Home Depot, 7,000. Corning, 3,500. Japanese electronics giant NEC, 20,000. AstraZeneca, 7,400. Toshiba, 4,500. Honda, 3,100. Allstate, 1,000. Texas Instruments, 3,400. Starbucks, a further 6,700. AOL, 700. And Eastman Kodak, 4,500. And in many cases, these figures represent 12 to 18% of the total workforce, let alone the fact salaries and bonuses are being frozen for those still around. Morgan Stanley Asia economist Stephen Roach said in Davos that quote, "We cannot underestimate the challenges and dangers that the world economy faces in 2009. Adding, not only is the American consumer just 20% into a multi-year adjustment due to our newfound frugality, but that any recovery will be anemic. News Corp Chairman Rupert Murdoch, in stressing the need for drastic action, observed that around the world people are, quote, depressed and traumatized to see their life savings, pensions, and the value of their homes get crushed. The crisis is getting worse, Murdoch added. Values are still going down, and there's no hiding place. It also shouldn't surprise anyone that given an opportunity in Davos, both Chinese Premier Wen Jiabao and Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin blasted the United States for dragging everyone else into the crisis. Putin said, quote, "A year ago, American delegates speaking from this rostrum emphasized the U.S. economy's fundamental stability and its cloudless prospects. Today, investment banks, the pride of Wall Street, have virtually ceased to exist." Premier Wen said, "Inappropriate macroeconomic policies, an unsustainable model of development characterized by prolonged low savings and high consumption, the blind pursuit of profit, and the failure of financial supervision all contributed to the carnage." But both Putin and Wen interjected a bit of optimism, as Putin said he was eager to work with the West on solutions, while Wen said China would attain 8% growth this year, come hell or high water. Back to President Obama. He mentioned when he took office that a reason he wanted to keep his BlackBerry was to stay connected, so that when he, quote, messed up, close quote, as he himself put it, his friends could let him know. The populism track he is taking in going after Wall Street is no doubt popular, but when he devolves into class warfare, which is where he is headed, then I suspect his BlackBerry could be buzzing. I'm going to wait 24 hours when it comes to the Obama-Biden middle-class initiative and get into it in more detail next time. But for now, I just have to say I worked on the street for a long spell myself, and of course the bonus system is way out of whack, especially when a firm reporting massive losses while taking taxpayer funds to stay afloat dulls them out anyway. Obama said talk of such bonuses was the height of irresponsibility. Britain's city minister, Lord Miners, expounded on the topic and speaking of the situation in his own country, though he could just as easily have been addressing the United States. Quote, "I have met more masters of the universe than I would like to, people who were grossly overrewarded and did not recognize that. Some of that is pretty unpalatable. They are people who have no sense of the broader society around them. There's quite a lot of annoyance, and much of that is justified." Close quote. As for the economic stimulus program that was passed in the House by a 244 to 188 margin, with zero Republicans voting for it and 11 Democrats saying nay as well, this is a Nancy Pelosi special. But as it will be carved up in both the Senate and in conference between the two houses, I'm not going to waste any time on it today. There's simply no way much of what you have heard in terms of the House package ends up being in a final bill. And I expect the administration to shelve the Buy American provision that otherwise would lead to a trade war. Should this, however, prove not to be the case, then the 30-day honeymoon I talked of last week for President Obama will be shortened to 25 days, President's Day weekend being the supposed target for coming up with a definitive plan. Lastly, on the good bank, bad bank issue, here too there is little more than talk. The bottom line is banks are not lending and have no real incentive to do so, let alone the fact all the crapola on their balance sheets negatively impacts capital requirements that also impact their ability to be good citizens. That means tight credit is severely impacting consumers and firms alike. Globally, rising unemployment compounds matters, as this in turn leads to further bank losses on credit cards, auto and home equity loans, another disincentive to lend. And so the vicious circle goes round and round and round. Stocks edged down for a fourth consecutive week, with the Dow Jones losing 1% to close at 8,000, while the S&P lost 0.7% and NASDAQ a mere fraction. January proved to be the worst opening month in market history, with the S&P losing 8.6% compared to the next worst January for that index, 1970's decline of 7.6%. Caterpillar set the tone Monday morning in forecasting sharply lower results for all of 2009, and given its global footprint, it didn't speak well of prospects for an immediate recovery. By week's end, Procter & Gamble is also reducing its outlook. The only bright spot, it seemed, was Amazon's solid report, and the shares rallied smartly. About 60% of companies have reported lower revenues thus far for the fourth quarter. On the bond side, the Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee met, and with the funds rate already basically at zero, there was little drama attached to the meeting. But the Fed did warn of deflation and said it will buy long-term treasuries if necessary in an attempt to influence rates. PIMCO's Paul McCulley said of Bernanke & Company, the Fed has pulled out all the stops, adding the Fed's mission has to be to bring down private sector borrowing rates. But instead, and due to prospects for excess of supply for as far into the future as one can see, yields are rising, not falling, despite the putrid economic activity. Not good. Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae are beginning to tap their respective $100 billion government credit lines, thanks to the fact the value of their assets has dropped below the amount they owe on their already existing obligations. Great job, guys. And here's the deal with this Merrill Lynch Bank of America fiasco. Former Merrill CEO John Thain said some incredibly stupid things this week in an interview with CNBC's Maria Bartiromo. Thain, in confessing that spending $1.2 million on redecorating his office probably wasn't a good idea, maintained, quote, "It really would have been very difficult for me to use it in the form that it was in," close quote. Oh, brother. Thain also added the now standard shtick that if you don't pay your people well enough, they'll go elsewhere. In defending his move to accelerate the payment of $4 billion in bonuses in December, right before both the merger with B of A was formalized and the reporting in mid-January of losses in excess of $15 billion. No one in middle America, or the rest of the country for that matter, understands this stilted logic, which is why President Obama pounced. Thain has since been subpoenaed by New York Attorney General Andrew Cuomo to explain just what the hell he was thinking, while Bank of America's CEO Ken Lewis is being quartered by his own board and shareholders for doing the Merrill deal in the first place, resulting in a loss of 80% in B of A's shares since then, as well as not coming clean on the losses before the merger was voted on. Former CEO Hugh McCall Jr., who still sits on the board, is said to be livid. But if that wasn't enough, picture Bank of America announcing it was deferring bonuses for employees in its capital markets and investment banking units. While these workers know their Merrill brethren have already been compensated at their customary higher levels. So talk about bad blood. I would think this is a classic North-South war in the offing. Where is Fort Sumter? And who has the best generals? Actually, having gone to school down south at Wake Forest, I already know the answer. The North won the war, but the South had the best generals. That's your Week in Review for today. I'll be back with you next Saturday.